Hello and welcome to the Practice Marketing Podcast, highlighting successful strategies from North America's fastest growing clinics so you can learn from their wins and power your practice growth. I'm your host, Neil Triggett, CEO of Practice Promotions, and today we're going to talk about maximizing your practice's financial success. We're blessed to have Eric Miller here from Econologix Financial Advisors. He's a whiz when it comes to advising physical therapy practice owners, chiropractic practice owners, and ophthalmologists. I think all kinds of different practice owners there that are in that medical space. So great to have you on here, Eric. Looking forward to your wisdom that you would share with us.
I'm ready to drop some nuggets. Let's roll.
Let's do it. All right. Yeah. So money, right? Money is the energy in the practice, right? We're there to help people get better or service them in a way so that they can improve their quality of life. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we're getting paid well for what we do. And we can make a lot of money, but it's about keeping it at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a little triangle that I usually will show people. I call it the ACE triangle, which is like the basic formula for economic freedom. And it's pretty simple. The top of the triangle is we have an A, which is you got to know how to acquire money. So you got to be good at like, what are the mechanics on acquiring money? I mean, I don't know how much money is spent on physical therapy every single year in chiropractic, but it's in the billions of dollars, isn't it? I mean, it's probably 15, 20, $30 billion, somewhere around there. So you don't really have to make it. You just have to learn how to acquire it. Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, knowing how to market and promote, sell, deliver, all those things. That's number one. The second part of the triangle is we call it the C, which is control. And this is where a lot of practice owners have difficulties, because it's one thing money coming in, it's another thing of how do I then allocate this money so that I have money in reserves, I have profit, I have the ability to reinvest, pay my people, pay my taxes, all those things. Mm-hmm. So it's just a level of control you have to be able to demonstrate, or if you don't, you're gonna go bankrupt. And then the last one is E, so it's ACE, and that's learning how to expand money. And that is just making sure that when you allocate and invest it, that you're putting it in areas where, I mean, some of it's got to go to consumption and such, but you got to be able to like reinvest it back into things that are going to create you more value and more money. Mm-hmm. Whether that's real estate or stocks and bonds or, you know, your business or whatever it would be, it's just having, you know, a strategy or a plan to be able to do that. So that's the simplicity of it. I mean,
it makes sense, right? You how do you handle money? You got to get it first. You got to acquire it. Then you got to control it, not spend too much, right? And then you have to expand it. So you got to reinvest it and make sure it's working for you, right? So
that's it.
Simple, right? Sounds great. Let's go do it.
Shoot, that's like 7 minutes and we're already done.
Fortunately, it gets a little more complex. I think the complexity, though, expands as your practice expands, right? So it's harder to acquire enough money, new patients and things, right? Obviously, to feed everybody in the practice. There's more holes that happen in the practice where money gets lost. You have like too much, you're too overstaffed, or, you know, you're not catching up on your billing. So you're getting behind on that. So the control, it gets harder the bigger that your practice gets. And then you may not have enough flowing into the expand side of it, or maybe you're not doing it. You're going after very aggressive ways of expanding your money. Like I think you taught us this, where you could have you want to have those huge return stocks, but it's like gambling, right? They could totally not pan out for you, right? And you could lose a lot of money that way. So yeah, it makes sense there with your ACE triangle.
Yeah, you got to look at, I think most practice owners forget how valuable their businesses could be. And, you know, in the physical therapy field right now, I mean, I'm seeing good practices that can sell for what, 7 to 9 times their earnings. Mm-hmm. So for every dollar you improve, that you become more profitable, it's not worth just a dollar of profit. It's worth 8 or 9 times that in value of your business. So if you want to look at places to allocate money, it'd be into those things. How do I increase volume? How do I increase our margins? Because that's where the return's actually going to be. And
yeah, that's a great piece of advice there too, because sometimes we don't think about that end result. Maybe we've been in practice for 5 or 10 years and yeah, we've got maybe another 15, 20 years to go. So we're not necessarily thinking about our exit strategy right away, but you're building that mechanism, you're building that asset, right? Which is your practice. And so mm-hmm. it should be paying you money, but you have to build that asset too, so that you will have that wealth at the end of the day for that sale.
Yeah. And there's a lot of money pouring into these industries where the values of these practices aren't, it isn't just the old days where it was just one times gross income or something like that. I mean, it can be pretty significant as long mm-hmm. as it's something that a buyer would want.
Yeah. I was reading a good book called Simple Numbers by Greg Crabtree's like an accountant. And what I liked about that was he talked about in business, there's always natural phases of the growth of a business, but in that $1 million to $5 million range, he calls it the black hole because so many things can go wrong in that growth phase. And what you need to do is like not be taking too much out of the business, but putting it back into the business to get it over that hump. Right. And I think you see that in some successful practices, they get that beyond that $1 million mark and then they start to have troubles, right? And you work with hundreds and hundreds of practices, so you probably see some of that happening on your end.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. There are different breakpoints of businesses, and it probably is different in different industries, but you know, there comes a point where, okay, when you first start off, I'm just doing everything all by myself. And then I'm hiring other people. And then I have to, figure out who my leaders are going to be and make sure they're trained and how am I going to compensate them? And, all this stuff takes more and more money to do that. Mm-hmm. And instead of bleeding the company dry, which I don't really see as a huge problem for a lot of owners, but they also aren't carving out when money comes in, making sure they are allocating it to places so that they can reinvest back into the business. You know, there's like four profit accounts that I try to have every owner like set up, and we call them profit accounts. It doesn't mean like they're just going to go into your pocket for you to consume and buy, another plane, Neil, or so. Not that you've ever done that, right? But the profit accounts, one's your well storage account, another one's obviously a tax account so that you can pay your taxes at the end of the year. And then, you have your business expansion and development account. And I think when a dollar comes into your organization, you do got to make sure that a percentage of that dollar goes into a business expansion and development account mm-hmm. so that you can expand and do things and be able to reward people or whatever it would be.
And would you say that that's a mistake that you see practices do, is that they don't allocate during the weeks or the months, and then hey, it's tax time and all of a sudden you're like, you owe a tax bill and you haven't saved that tax money throughout the year? Is that something that you see?
Well, it's March 19th and it probably exactly 4 weeks come April 15th, we're going to get about 5 or 6 calls. These calls are going to be from practice owners that are in a panic. Panic is going to be that, hey, my accountant just called me, and it's going to be the same thing every time. It's going to say they congratulated me on having a really great year, but now I owe $75,000 in taxes. Where am I going to get it from?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that's just like clockwork every single year. So yes, it is an element of, you have your different expense buckets in your practice. You have your rent and utilities, you have your, divisional and overhead expenses, you have your employee staff wages and such. And that but just about covers all the expenses of your business. But then we also have the quote unquote profit expense. And that needs to be looked at just like any other bill, right? You have to make sure that it's carved out. And part of that profit is a tax account, because your business gives you a tax liability at the end of the year. personally.
Yeah.
Because the profit of the business is going to transfer over to your personal return. And so we just make sure that you set up a tax account. It's not hard to do. None of these things are really difficult to do. And I don't know why most people were never taught how to do it.
Yeah, I think it's one thing about knowing it. And I remember reading the book Profit First. That kind of got me working on that. And but it's discipline at the same time. It's like it takes a little while for you that to become a habit. And it's easy to say, oh, I've got this money coming in here. Let me just, the distribution or whatever it may be there. But it's hard to say, okay, I'm not even looking at that. It's going right into the tax account, right? Because it's like, we don't even want to think about taxes until it's time to actually think about taxes. But if it's not saved up throughout the year, then yeah, you're behind, way behind the eight ball, and you're setting yourself up for disaster there. So that's...
It is discipline. You're right. You got to be able to like look at that account and this is the purpose of it. It's not for what I want it right now for. It's for something else.
Yeah. And so as you work with hundreds of practice owners out there, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see practice owners make, right, when it comes to finances?
Well, I think number one, just not even willing to confront their finances. That, somebody else will do it. They don't even look at their P&Ls. They don't even look at their balance sheets. They don't even look at any of this. They just say, no, I don't want to do any of that. That's a number one mistake. It doesn't mean that you have to be an expert in corporate or accounting or anything like that, or know all the terms, but you should know some basic things and being able to look at your profit and loss statements and saying, okay, how are we doing on staff wages? What is that as a percentage of our revenue? Good. We're in alignment there. We're pretty close. Okay, great. So how are we on our other overhead expenses? I mean, cause there are industry specifics of what you should be spending on some of these things and, just trying to stay in alignment with that. So I think just being able to confront that and being able to look at that is certainly, a mistake a lot of people make. I think another one is, if I'm looking at it from a CFO standpoint, this may sound, weird or like not part of a hat that someone would wear, but not making sure you're getting maximum production from your people. I mean, that is a role of a CFO, is to, I have these people, and I need to make sure that we're at least making, above what our red line needs to be. And that red line, of course, includes our profits and everything else. Mm-hmm. And getting, pushing people so that the practice can function and be solvent in that. And I see a lot of people just kind of step back and, not be a little bit passive on that role. And, when you were growing up, Neil, do you remember the person that said, hey, Neil, just take it easy. Don't work so hard,
No.
or do you remember the person that kind of got in on you a little bit, said, Neil, you're really doing everything that you can be doing right now to live up to your potential?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you remember those people in your life.
Sure.
So, I know a lot of people are afraid to confront their staff right now because they're afraid to lose people. And I do get that, but you also just have to make sure you keep your integrity in, and it's your business, and you expect a high standard from your people. So,
yeah, and being in practice, I can so relate to that, because I was I couldn't confront staff members who were just being a pain in the rear. They were not team players, and they were kind of half-assing everything, right? And so I remember my wife Amy and I, we played a game called the spine game. And whenever we like uncomfortably with, knots in your stomach, you're having to like tell a staff member to, do something. And we give ourselves a little like paper vertebrae, and we built a spine that way whenever. So it kind of helped us make it a game of going out of our comfort zone to confront staff member who are not performing the way that they should have been performing. And eventually that person, left, and we got better and better people. And I think every time that you lose someone or you fire someone, you kind of level up. right? And you learn what to find in people there. But you're so right in that it from a practice standpoint, you're a service-based industry, right? You only have your biggest asset is time, right? And how much time your providers have to provide service, right? How you're taking care of patients. So if they have holes in their schedule, or you know, if they're not billing correctly, like there's lots of ways that you can not be as efficient in your production, right? And so that definitely hits the bottom line much harder. And the longer that goes, the worse it gets.
You're 100, 100. Not having targets either, I think, is a mistake. Mm-hmm. You know, making sure that there's targets and actually talking with people about the money side of the business. I think it's a mistake when people try to hide it, or they try to, like, you know, not discuss it. No, I'd just be as transparent and open. Not about every single account, but
yeah, for the basics. I hear that. Well, I'm not in it for the money. I'm here to help people.
Mm.
That's honorable. You know, that's exactly the purpose of your clinic, is to help people get better. But you got to get paid, right? You got to make a living out of this and be comfortable with it. And so I think what you see with people who say those kind of things, that hey, I'm not about the money, is that they don't have a good understanding of money, right? And they don't, and again, like, we're not taught that in school, so I don't blame anybody, because it's, you go into practice usually because someone, you know, you weren't happy where you were working. You're like, hey, I can do a better job myself, right? I'm going to go open up a clinic. So you go open up a clinic, but then you don't realize, hey, you just became an entrepreneur.
Right.
So now I've got to learn, you know, finance. I've got to learn operations. I've got to learn softwares, you know, like all these different things that you now have to learn and get better at. And money is a big one. Finance is a big one. And I think we don't get any training with that really in high school, college, PT school. Like, none of that really helps us understand. And I think that, you know, when we worked with Econologics there, like, there was a lot of training on just basic financial principles of running your business, and it's like, holy cow, this is the stuff I just never got, right?
Yeah, it drives me a little batty when I hear owners get talked to about, oh, I'm not in it for the money, or you're only in it for the money. Man, they just don't see the amount of time, energy, effort, risk that is taken in ownership. It's enormous.
Yeah.
And
the risk.
And honestly, the amount of money that you make as an owner, I mean, until you really get humming and purring, is, I've seen many owners that forego their pay to make sure their staff is paid.
Right.
I've seen that way more than the other way around. So that's where I get, I'm like, all right, that person that says something like that, either, just like you said, doesn't really know, or is just selfish. Because the bigger the practice gets, the more people that they can help. And the only way that you're going to expand is if you have money.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, the derivation of the word profit is to expand. So it is, you know, fun little fact for the day. You probably didn't know that English, that English
my education, Latin derivatives,
right? That English education that you got right there.
I love it. Well, for me, it's always like, I keep coming back to something I learned a long time ago, which is basically, if like, you're just focusing on three key areas in your practice. One is acquiring new patients, right? Marketing, operations. How do you run it so that you get a great outcome for patients and everything runs smoothly in the clinic? And then finance. How are you billing correctly, collecting correctly, managing the money, making sure that you're bringing a good profit at home at the end of the day? So like, if you just always looking at those three key areas, you can do very well in business. But what happens is that we go to our comfort zone, which is usually, you know, operations, where we're good at treating patients, right? I mean, we may not understand marketing too well. And we a lot of times don't understand finance too well, and billing can be really complicated. So we just don't pay it. We pay someone to just handle that for us. So you kind of have to be a little master of each one of those areas and continue to enhance your own education in those three kind of critical buckets, right?
Do you want more freedom in your clinic? Then you need to work on your business, not just in it. The top practice owners know that they need a marketing system that consistently attracts patients from the internet. And at Practice Promotions, we've helped hundreds of practice owners skyrocket to the top of Google and get more new patients from online. Go to practicepromotions.net/kit to get our free practice marketing sample kit. It includes all our digital marketing tips and tricks that will get you new patients from Google. That's practicepromotions.net/kit, K-I-T, for a free marketing kit. And now back to the show.
So
takes a little time, but there's plenty of people out there know what they're doing that you can hire or learn from, mm-hmm. listen to, and yeah, it's not hard to do.
Your knowledge, right? Yeah. So Eric, as you, we talked about some of the challenges here that practices see and face, but I'm curious, because you work with so many practice owners, is you probably have clients that are doing quite well, right? Mm-hmm. Even in a tough economy.
Oh, like, yeah.
What are they doing that they're doing well?
What are they doing that they're doing well? Well, I mean, like on the money side, or
yeah, from a financial perspective, like obviously they make a decent enough profit at the end of the day, and they're more successful, can have investments and things like that. So I'm kind of curious, as you've chatted with a lot of practice owners, there's those that are struggling, right, to be profitable, and then there's those folks that are profitable. And so what are those people that are profitable, what are they doing that's a little bit better or different?
Well, I think, like we talked about in the beginning, they just have a little bit more control over where the money is going, and they have like a strategic plan of how they're allocating the money. And I think that just allows them, as the more volume comes in, to accumulate a lot more. Mm-hmm. And then they have the ability to now use that money, and they wake up one day and I got, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 sitting right here. And not to say they don't have problems, because even when you start getting to that level where like money isn't like a super concern to you, you got a whole new batch of problems now. What do I do with it? How do I not lose it? Those kinds of things. But I think it definitely goes back to the most successful owners start thinking more like as owner investors, not so much as practitioners anymore. You know, mm-hmm. where can we work on, taking out time to improve our service? They just, they think a little bit more strategic. How can we expand, bring on additional services, all these things that the freedom of that time gives you to create. And
yeah.
that to me is where a lot of the most successful owners, spend their time when they get in that phase. Where
I've seen, that's so true. Like when I've talked to people that have really grown their business and then exited their business, their practice, the thing that I've seen time and time again is that they do become more of that practice owner, right? That mm-hmm. business owner. And they get better at the skill set of business, and they still might treat some patients. I've seen mm-hmm. that. Right? They still treat some patients. They still have their hand in it. But they're really dedicated to making sure that the people in their practice get really good results for patients.
Mm-hmm.
But they've pulled themselves a little bit further away from the frontline care, like at a full time. You can't be a full time practitioner and run a larger business or a growing business, right? You have to have time to be able to, as they say, work on your business, not necessarily in it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're so right that I've seen that the more and more successful people are the ones that take the time to learn more about business and implement business strategies and kind of pull themselves a little bit from the day to day in the practice.
Yeah. Really work on quality control and how we can deliver mm-hmm. our service well above what everyone else is doing.
And so as you start to work with different practice owners out there, like what's some of the first things that you kind of work people through? Is it like a strategy? Like what's kind of their first steps in working with you?
Yeah, I think the first steps obviously are we have to get some kind of plan together. Like I want to know in 10 years, 15 years, 7 years, what do you want your life to look like? What's that mm-hmm. look like? And from there, we can then, develop some kind of a roadmap that will allow you. I mean, when I ask people like, what does your financial life look like in 10 years? Most of them are like, well, I'd like to have zero debt. Okay, great. All right. Let's mark that down. You don't want to have any debt. I want to have, you know, $15,000 a month of passive income. Okay, great. Let's mark that down. I want to, you know, have a boat, or I want to have a second home, whatever it would be. Starting there, and then we can say, okay, where do people fall down? It's not so much their goals, it's their lack of financial systems. So now we have to go in there and say, let's create the financial systems so that the money can be there for you to achieve these things. And let's make sure that you have the right targets, that your practice is producing what it needs to. And you know, a lot of the time that's really where we start. It's like, wow, I mean, you're making X amount a month in your practice. You know, you're making $100,000 a month. If you want to reach these goals, you're going to have to do at least 120 to 150 or something like that. You know, we kind of make the reality, which no one really likes to start off with.
I think we've all gone through those, you think back to
but that's like where you come
in, you work for other places, the 401k, and you're kind of going through those retirement planner widgets and stuff, right? And you're like, oh man.
So we really give them the what the business needs to produce to fulfill their personal goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if they need additional help, obviously, you know, you bring in people like you and other people that can like help them with that part of the equation, and then making sure we allocate the money correctly into these places, and that we have accountability and frequency. And when I say accountability and frequency, it's like frequency of calls, frequency of, as I think that's really important when it comes to money. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take your attention off of your money for any period of time, it just has the tendency to get spent or go everywhere.
Yeah.
So really, really having frequency of meetings with your financial team, so that nothing's getting missed. You know, profit and loss statements are being reviewed. You know, your profit accounts are set up, your debt reduction is set up. You know, you got your estate plan, your assets protected, tax planning, all these things are being done. And, you know, just a lot of owners don't have that financial advisor that's really doing that for them. I mean, they got someone that's managing their 401k, but he's not doing all those other things.
Yeah, that was my kind of next question. Was you obviously you work with different practice owners or different size clinics and stuff that come through. As a percentage, like how many people do you find are working with some sort of advisor or have never worked with some sort of advisor? I'm curious what you see on your end.
It's about, I'd say, 70% of most practice owners are working with, now when I say an advisor, I'm talking about someone that's just managing an investment portfolio for them. So they like manage like an Edward Jones or mm-hmm. Merrill Lynch guy or somebody that's just managing their like 401k portfolio or their okay. IRAs or something like that, which is, you know, obviously needed, but most of them never ask any questions about the practice. Mm-hmm. And they don't really show people how to recover lost income out of the practice, or making sure that they're, you know, taking profits out strategically. How are we doing that to build other income sources? So it's about 60 to 70% just have like that local advisor that just is doing that. And I think that's probably costing people, no joke, probably over $100,000 a year of money that they could have retained for themselves.
Hmm.
Because that person isn't integrating their business into their personal life
we all know in running a practice, it's like it is part of your personal life, right?
No doubt.
<It's your> baby.
And it's amazing how much money is lost in the practice, because if you leave too much money in the business, it's going to get spent somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make sure you set up these, that's why I said you got to set up these systems so that money is, there's some portion of that practice revenue is retained for the benefit of you personally.
And so can you explain to our audience, you know, you taught us this a long time ago, but basically why the parent company, why you should treat your household as a parent company and the businesses as not the parent company?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to describe that would be in the industries, there's a lot of acquisition right now of physical therapy practices. They get bought out by these big corporate groups. All these corporate groups are backed by private equity that have a parent company. And, you know, the first thing, the first charge that, that you'll see these quote unquote groups charge the practice they just acquired is what's called a management fee, a 10% management fee that goes directly to the parent company to repay back the investors and such. So we just took that same concept of corporate America, and we're applying that to a household, because your household is really the thing that owns all of your investments, your assets, your IRAs, your 401ks, your brokerage accounts, your business interest, your real estate. It is the parent company. And really, at the end of the day, what are you trying to do? You're trying to create a scenario where you have this household, you know, you and your kids, where you have, you know, time to spend with them, where you have income sources that don't necessarily depend upon you having to be there all day to get them. You'd like to have less risk, no debt, all these things. And so that's why we look at the household as that parent company. This is what we're trying to do, is really fortify that household so that it's not dependent upon the practice forever. Mm-hmm. It will be for a period of time, but let's make it so it's not a forever thing. And then that way, when you decide to sell it, which everyone's going to at some point, it's not like, oh my God, I won't be able to retire if I don't get the deal that I want. It's, you know, you can exit out how you want to. Mm-hmm. And that's how we look at the parent company.
Yeah. And it makes the most sense, right? Because really it's your business, right? And you own it, right? It's not that. And I think I remember kind of feeling this way too, is like you set up this business, but then it's almost like you feel like you're employed to that business, that entity. And it's sort of like just flipping that mindset where you're the owner and everything in the business works for you and your household, right? That was like a huge mind shift for me when I learned that. And I was like, oh, wow, you know what? That is so true, right? That's mm-hmm. the way it really works. And it should be doing well. It should be helping people, but it should be flowing income up to the household, right? And supporting the household and everything that needs to happen, you know, with that and the assets and the investments and things like that. So, yeah, I've always appreciated that way that you taught us about that. And so I think that's great to share with everybody.
Yeah. More owners definitely need to adopt that, where they're just going to be churning and burning and they'll burn themselves out at some point in time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's talk a little bit about exit strategy, right? Mm-hmm. And so you help clinics, kind of look through that process from a financial lens. Right. And so what's some of the things that you found as you've help people through that exit strategy process? Like, what brings them about the greatest return on their practice, their most valuable asset?
Oh, well, like what areas drive the most value for, mm-hmm. for the business?
For the sale,
yeah. I think there's definitely gonna be three of them. I mean, certainly the biggest one is your profitability. I mean, it's just going to be a thing. I mean, that's what the value is going to be, based upon a multiple of your profit. So that's certainly going to be a big part of it. You know, your staff and the culture and the organization that you've already established is a huge part mm-hmm. of the sale. So if you have, obviously having people that know what they're doing and good leadership and good quality retention and not a lot of turnover, I think that's also going to look quite well. And then I think the third thing, and you could probably say this is almost as equally as important as profit, is that there's a constant flow of new patients coming in the door. And because who wants to buy something that is dying? Mm-hmm. Who's going to overpay for something that is kind of trending downward? So if you want to really have, you know, the kind of sale that you want, which is, you know, a high multiple and millions of dollars, then you have to make sure you put an emphasis on showing a buyer, like, look, here are the stats on our new patients. They just keep on going up and up and up. And that's here are reviews, and look at all this. Look at the goodwill. Because mm-hmm. that's what they're buying the practice for. Like when you sold your practice, if you remember that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, much so, assets there. Yeah. You know,
it's
a few treatment tables and some computers.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, what was it? I mean, I think the majority of it was probably goodwill. Right. Yeah. And that goodwill is created, you know, by you and everyone else in the practice and your ability to acquire new patients. So mm-hmm. those three things right there, I think, are going to be the biggest drivers for, you know, financial success.
Excellent. And so I think too, like the kind of the mindset of the practice owner, like if you can put yourself in the shoes of a buyer, like what would get you to pay the most? And that's going to be walking into a clinic that's as turnkey as possible, right? So if I can walk in there and it continues to do great and service people and make good profit and money, and I don't have to do a heck of a lot to keep it going, like that's super valuable versus I have to go in and I have to turn this whole thing around because it's a bit of a mess, then I'm not going to pay much for that, right? So, and then as you, I'd be interested to find out this, like, do you get people, come to you and they're talking about, hey, I'm thinking about selling my business and I'm going to do it now or this year, right? Do they plan like, hey, I'm thinking about 3 to 5 years time selling my business, or is it people like last minute thinking that they're going to sell their business?
I mean, we get all kinds. If someone's just like had just the terrible day,
Okay.
here, take it. Here are the
Yeah,
keys. You can have it.
that's okay. We all have those days, I'm sure. Yeah, you can have the keys.
Try not to tell people to do that. Take a step back and let's just see what's bothering you and go fix those things and come back in a year and see if you're still in that same mindset. So, but yeah, I mean, you really should start thinking about if you have 3 to 5 years, what things we've talked about. These are the things that I want to make sure are in place. So, depending on how long you have. If you have a little longer time frame, then you can work on that and you can, think about how you want to exit out, who you want to exit out to, what type of transition you want for yourself. What are you going to do next? Because you got to have some kind of game that's set up for you. I mean, can you imagine if when you sold your practice, you guys didn't have anything else to do? That would have been bad.
Yeah, because I think that happens, like people get an offer like, oh, you know what? I'm going to sell my business and I'm going to, retire earlier and do these kind of things. And then they're usually back at exactly what they did before. They'll start up another business, another practice, right? Because that's what they know and they're good at. So I've seen that happen before where people exit and then they're like, "Well, I just got nothing else to do," or, "and I burnt through all my money and now I need to get back into
Yeah, that's bad.
practicing again."
Well, think about it. When you own it, you're going 180 mile an hour, and then all of a sudden you sell it and you go down to like zero. That's gonna mess with somebody. So you really have to have something purposeful, some kind of game that will get you excited again about living in life and not blow all your money, which does happen.
Man. So let's kind of shift gears here a little bit because obviously we're coming up to a special time of year, which is tax time. And I know that there's different strategies and things that people do. I just if there's any kind of common things that we should look for, and obviously we have to pay our taxes, but what's the ways that we can do things within our practice that may help us offset certain tax liabilities?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously making sure you're maximizing all available deductions that you can and that you're working with someone that understands. I really like industry specific people, so I think it's good to work with industry specific advisors, accountants, someone that has a number of these types of clients, because then they can see like what other people are doing and they can impart that knowledge and advice on to you. But in terms of tax deductions, I mean, obviously the accountants are always going to say, max fund your retirement plans or buy a bunch of stuff that you may or may not need, as a way to like reduce your tax liability. And there's more things that you can do than that. You can contribute to like an HSA account. I think it's like up to $7,700, right now. That would be another deduction for to offset healthcare expenses. You can prepay certain expenses where you just prepay them for the next year. That would limit, your amounts that you're paying right now. What else you could do?
Marketing,
You
right?
can you
Marketing,
could you could spend a
marketing's
you
deductible.
could have a huge, like, beautiful new website that you've always wanted,
That's going to
and
produce you much more
it's
new
going to
patients,
produce you
money,
massive
right?
value, and it gives you a tax deduction. and it improves the value and visibility of the business. There you go. How about that?
That's right, man. Marketing. Marketing is tax deductible. So, and it generates your profit, right? So
marketing is tax deductible. That's for sure.
It's definitely a good thing to be making sure that you're investing in your business there. So that's one thing we always try to help our clients understand too, is like, hey, you know what? Marketing is like, I'm putting this money into marketing. It's an expense. Well, yeah, it's also tax deductible, right? So it's helping you out. Great. So, Eric, any other words of wisdom here for we wrap up, helping our audience?
Yeah, and look, I mean, there's a lot of external factors that we're kind of running into right now. You know, we just had the cybersecurity attack. I don't know what the whole thing has been on that, what the outcome of that has been on Care Center. Is that what the name of it was?
Was that with United?
Yeah, United Healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got another, you know, election coming up, so that'll be guaranteed fodder for, you know, of a lot of, well, I won't even go there. What else? We have, you know, prices are, you know, I don't know. I mean, we still have inflation. We have risk of what happens to the economy if, you know, something bad happens or war outbreaks or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always going to be external factors.
There's variables, right? There's always variables.
Always variables.
I hope everybody learned that from COVID, that there's some huge variables that can always come and knock you on your rear end when you least expect it, right?
But I think the thing is that most of your, but these things are, you don't know when it's going to happen, but we know that likely it's going to happen at some point in time. Mm-hmm. So make sure we're getting prepared. That's all. And don't wait to do these things. The bigger that you are, the more protection that you have. And I think that's why it's like making sure that you're allocating money, that you're building reserves, that you're doing, 99% of the financial condition that you're in is not due to external factors. It's an inside job. It's things that you're either doing or you're not doing. Mm-hmm. So I like to let people know that you do have control over the outcome, but you better get prepared, you know, and I want to make sure everyone does that. And whether it's, you know, getting more patients in the door, whether it's controlling your money better, whatever it is, make sure you're doing that so that if the variable does happen, you can win against the competition.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the competition isn't doing that.
Yeah, and it's having your financial affairs in order, having good reserves, having that cushion, you weather the storm. I mean, there's mm-hmm. always going to be a storm that pops up. It may not be something that happens every year. It may be something that happens every few years, but there's something that's going to happen, right? It might be small. It might be major. It might be, hey, United Healthcare stopped paying for a month because they got a cyber attack. Well, that was 25% of what we treat as United Healthcare patients. So guess what? My finances are affected here for the next month. I should have my financial affairs in order, so I have some reserves to fall back on, mm-hmm. get through that period until they get caught up on their end, you know, and that's kind of the small stuff. But then, hey, guess what? Another pandemic comes along and everybody shut down for 2 months. Oh, I can't necessarily rely on the government paying me out right away. Do I have money to fight personally weather that storm and also for the business to weather that storm? So yeah, the more that you're financially stable and secure, the more that you can take the weather as it comes through, but your competitors can't.
Nope. And I don't think there's going to be another bailout next time.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah. But hey, thank you so much for all your awesome advice here for our audience and our practice owners out there. Definitely check out Eric at it's econologicsfinancialadvisors.com. Is that right?
Yeah. You can just go to Wealth for PTs. Wealth Love for it. PTs. Yeah. You like that landing page?
Like I like that. Guy. I like yeah. that. Wealthforpts.com. Yeah. Check it out. Yeah. So a bunch of resources on those pages there. Eric and his team are awesome. We use them. A lot of our clients use them. So they are specific to helping practice owners, as he mentioned, with all kinds of different financial investments and running the practice the way that it should. So thanks for being on here, Eric, and look forward to having you on again.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Practice Marketing Podcast. Don't forget to get your free practice marketing sample kit at practicepromotions.net/kit. Start 2024 off the right way by building marketing systems that automatically attract new patients from online. That's practicepromotions.net/kit.